Welcome to Help and Hope, the weekly podcast of CCEF. This week at CCEF, we listen in on part of a conversation with faculty member Winston Smith, in which he asked, solo sex, what's wrong with it?
Listen, sexual fantasy, masturbation, for the most part, those are things that people do by themselves. So in the privacy of their own home. Who's being harmed? And I think what they don't take into account is that they're actually practicing things in their minds that change the way that they see and think about other people. Sexual fantasies rarely stay self-contained. People find that they end up being intrusive, creating images that they're not happy with, and it creates a habit of relationship that really is destructive. What do I mean by that? Without going into detail, just ask yourself, what roles do people play in my sexual fantasies? Almost without exception, if you really think about it, the function they're playing is they exist to make you feel good. They exist not just to make you feel good physically, but to make you feel good emotionally. They applaud you. They worship you. They need you. If your fantasies take you in a little bit more of a darker direction, maybe they give you pleasure by cringing or being afraid of you. All right, well, all of a sudden, you're not doing something that's strictly sexual. You're doing something that's very relational. And in your own mind, what you're really doing is you're practicing making people into objects. You're treating image bearers of God as if they are just objects, pieces of meat that only exist for you. And you're consuming them in your mind. And you're pairing those sinful, selfish impulses with physical pleasure, which sort of just hops it up and makes it even more powerful. So when you really look at it, and you don't chuckle at it like you're an adolescent, but you say, you know, in my mind, I'm doing things to and with people that I would be ashamed for anybody else to know what I'm thinking. Well, that should tell you something right there, because it would be disturbing. No one wants to feature in your fantasy because of the things and the ways that you make people do things. So you're practicing thinking about people in a way that is unworthy of image bearers, unworthy of people, which is only worthy of slaves and objects. Now, you might say, okay, it's not great, but just because I fantasize that way doesn't mean that I really treat people that way. Well, no, because it'd be against the law for you to do that. But the subtle attitudes will leak out, will intrude into your life. So here's a scenario that I don't think is hard to imagine. This is not unusual either. Husbands and wives often have different levels of sexual desire. They desire different amounts of sexual frequency. It's not unusual for husbands to want sex more frequently than their wives. What do they do with that? It's very tempting just to say, okay, I don't want to fight about that. I don't even want my wife to know that, because it makes me feel pathetic or weak. So I'll just go sort of take care of my own urges by myself. When you do that, what you're doing is you're taking something difficult in the relationship, and rather than working it through or talking about it, rather than making yourself vulnerable, rather than asking for something, rather than working through problems that are an obstacle to intimacy, you run and seek your own comfort instead. So you're practicing being comfortable. You're practicing being selfish. Meanwhile, those problems are left unresolved. And after a while, you can kind of get in this habit. When my wife makes me angry, when my wife frustrates me, not just sexually, but in any old way, it's just easier to go, you know, sort of medicate myself sexually than to do the hard work of a relationship. And people don't often connect those dots, but But sexual sin, sexual fantasy, masturbation often will become sort of a drug of choice, an escape of choice for people in difficult relationships. They may not self-consciously make that connection, but they're, rather than maturing and growing in love, they're practicing escaping. And in that, they're becoming less and less mature. It's not just the physical act of stimulating yourself. It's how am I stimulating my heart? How am I stimulating my soul when I feel the heat of life in a broken world? And look, I mean, this calls for wisdom. We don't want to be sort of ridiculous legalists who all of a sudden sort of outlaw every form of pleasurable escape. You know, God created all things and made them good. Apart from sin, they're good, and we can enjoy them. Well, enjoying the things that God has created isn't always an escape. Look, I like to read fiction at least for 10 minutes before I go to sleep at night. That's not a sinful escape. That's something I can do and give thanksgiving to God. But what I choose to read and how it shapes me is something that calls for wisdom. You know, I can choose to read some things that direct me to the good and the right things of life, or I can choose to read things that push me in another direction. And rather than being legalistic about it, I think the scripture would call us to discernment. When I enjoy the things of creation, what do I do with them and how do they change me? There might be things that you read or meditate on or enjoy. They don't fall into the category of even R-rated erotic fiction, but they could affect you in the same exact way. And there are other people who might read something that to you would be harming and take you in that direction, but to them it doesn't. So I don't mean to be saying anything to create, you know, to suggest that there's some fixed line that no one can cross. I mean, you have to stand before the Lord and ask for wisdom and help in understanding that. It is a problem of lust, but what I'm saying is it's much more than that, or at least it's much more than lust defined sexually. It's the broader lusts of the human heart. It's my craving for control, for power, for ease, for comfort, for pleasure, for being liked. So rather than just, I mean, I think the mistake that men will make in particular is, all right, I'm tired of this, I'm embarrassed by it. I'm going to make war on sexual fantasy and masturbation. I put software on my computer that makes it almost impossible for me to see pornography. I lock the parental controls on the cable TV. I stay away from, you know, the magazine racks at the bookstore. You know, get an accountability partner. Those aren't bad things to do. There's wisdom in all those things, and yet it's not addressing the roots of the problem or other things that fuel the problem. So I would say, I'm not telling you to not do those things, but I'm just saying go deeper. Think about what are the occasions that make me want to sin this way? What are the hard things out there in life, in my relationships, that make me want to retreat and see sexual fantasy and masturbation as a refuge? How does this serve as a refuge for me? And a refuge from what? How would Christ call me into those hard places to grow and mature so that I don't need this as a refuge anymore, because I'm learning to make Christ my refuge as I move into difficult places? So here are a couple guidelines that I think of. If in doubt, ask for help, because it won't hurt you. It won't hurt you to go to a wise and godly person for help. So if you have any inkling at all that maybe you ought to do it, then talk about it and give it a try. I don't know of anybody who's gone to a good counselor and regretted it. Even if that counselor said, you know what, I've seen you two or three times and you're actually doing a great job. That's really helpful too. If you're doing everything right, it's nice to hear it from some objective outside person. And if something is off or you need more help, it's good to know that too. So I think it is right and it is appropriate if you have if this is a chronic problem for you that is affecting your marriage, then then it can be an important and wise thing for you to understand how to talk about that in your marriage. But not in such a way that you are asking your spouse to police the behavior. So it might be, honey, I just want to, you know, this is an entire conversation, but in some way you have a conversation that says, you know, I'm really struggling with sexual lust, and I found myself looking at some things that I shouldn't look at. I want you to know that I'm dealing with this. I know that it's wrong, that I'm dealing with it. It's a sin against God. I'm sinning against you. And I'm talking to so-and-so about it, you know. And I'm telling you this not because I want you to worry, but because I'd like you to pray with me, you know. And I want you to know that maybe it's shown up in the bedroom in one way or another, okay? And I'm taking responsibility for that. And that can be, it's going to hurt no matter how you say it, but you can say it in such a way that it points to redemption. Okay, God's doing something. I feel guilty about it. I'm responding to it. I'm asking for help. It's not your fault. That can be constructive.
Thank you, Winston, for those helpful thoughts. Today's podcast is just a taste of what Winston Smith and dozens of other top-ranked speakers will bring you at CCEF's National Conference, November 13th through 15th, 2009. Register before June 30th, and you can take advantage of our super early bird rate for the conference. Don't delay, though. Conference fees will never be this low again. To register and find out more about the conference, visit www.ccef.org. Thanks again for listening, and join us next week for more help and hope.